A thing doesn't have to be perfect to be brilliant. Hold on a second, Harlem's happening. Are we? Okay, let's go. Here we go. Welcome to Casually Brilliant, a Zooms with Friends Masterclass podcast series. I'm your host, Ebony Janice. Each week for the next several weeks, I will share casual conversations with some of my closest friends and faves on various topics, including race, faith, healing, mental health, music, the metaphysical world, and anywhere else our casual brilliance takes us in the conversation. Today's special guest is the homie Joel Daniels. He is a storyteller, a father, and in his own words, a recovering rapper. His most recent TED Talk has been viewed on YouTube more than 1 million times. I cannot wait for you to get to know the casual brilliance that is Joel Daniels.
I don't want to say I was taken for granted because I try to think that I'm pretty, and I feel like I can speak for both of us when I say this, like we're pretty intentional about how we're showing up in spaces for ourselves. Mm-hmm. But I think like physical contact,
yeah,
like with other people.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, just like your friends. It's definitely underrated.
It's no way, though, that you can, no matter how mindful you are, there's mm-hmm. no way that you can plan for something like this.
No.
In your wellness journey, there's no way that you can plan for the United States of America shutting down.
Word.
And with no end in sight.
Yeah. Like we have a standing creative Zoom conference with our creative team for my job. Like we hang out like our own version of a happy hour. And you know, we're talking about we probably won't be back in the office, and this is on the trying to be as optimistic as possible, like 3 months. And even with that, probably what we're imagining a world in which there's like about 80 people in the office. So like it's maybe 2 to 3 days out of the week, half of the office will be there, and then we'll rotate just to kind of keep, you know what I'm saying, to try to make sure we're flattening the curve in that way. But and that's new normal. Like I don't know when this is gonna be over.
That's when you say new normal, it feels like saying when this is gonna be over, especially because of where I live. I feel so emotional, so let's blame it on the rain because I've been good, but But the homies on the block,
yeah,
they still out here trying to hug the block, and we ain't supposed to be touching nothing.
You're supposed to be hugging nothing, brother.
You're supposed to be hugging nothing. I was talking to somebody the other day that my local drug dealers need to get an app. 2 Chainz said that years ago. iTrap. They need to get something because they can't still be doing hand-to-hand. And that's what they're doing still. And I just don't understand. Joel, if I sent you a picture of at like 1:30 this morning when I woke up on the couch drunk, trying to figure out where I was, the way I remember where I was is because the niggas on the corner was out here wilding. Like 5 cars in the street, hanging out, all kinds of just making noise, music as loud as possible, and to the point that I feel a little some kind of way about myself as a revolutionary Black woman, that when the police pulled up, I was like, thank God.
Man.
Jesus.
Trap or die.
Hate it ain't me. I mean, snitches get snitches, but also
snitches get stitches.
Also, what is y'all doing?
I think you bring up a really good point, though. Because it makes me think about the other, like, our skill sets and how, like, they're so underutilized. You know, the idea of, you know, and we had a conversation about this outside, Abe, when we talk about capitalism, like, just how fucked it is, right? But the idea that we haven't created a system in which those who have to look at other means in order to contribute to the community and to their family, like we haven't created a system in which they can utilize the other skill sets that they have, so that's not a priority. So brothers and sisters aren't having to, you know, submit themselves to this. And like this is exposing so many flaws. I mean, granted, we've seen the flaws already, but this is kind of, everything's at a stop.
Yeah, it's definitely like when you talk about it's exposing stuff that we knew about.
Yeah.
To think that your knowing could be deeper than what you knew.
Yeah.
You know something and then see it with your eyeballs and be like,
yeah,
I couldn't have known this. I couldn't have known so what I was getting to is the idea that we'll ever go back to business as usual. That isn't a thing.
Yeah.
We will never be the same, to the point that institutions are going to have to figure out, like people are on the spot right now, creating curriculum, I teach at New Jersey City University, undergrad in the Women and Gender Studies department, and they're sending us like emails all day long, every day for, oh, we got to update to that. Oh, we got to update to that. Oh, here's a better way to do that. Because nobody ever thought that we would be having to go from being a on-campus, in-person, face-to-face school to everybody trying to get their situation online really quick.
Yeah.
And you have people who are never, ever thinking about that. Think about older white women who have been teaching at this institution for, 20, 30 years, and now you're telling them you got to do on Zoom. Be on Zoom. What is a Zoom?
What is it? The Zoom? What is it?
Can y'all see me? I sent the lesson. Can you hear me? Damn, they don't have a clue. So moving forward, institutions are going to have to figure out how to reconcile going back to a regular, regularly scheduled program when now you've opened up this world of possibilities for people who aren't going to want to go back.
Yeah, and I love that because even when I look at the work that I do, right, 9-to-5 copyright stuff like marketing, advertising, we have clients who are just having to pivot entire campaigns because they're having to figure out how to speak to the climate that we're in presently. But then it's also forcing us to be like, we've been having conversations about working from home and that not necessarily being the go-to primary function of how we like show up at the office. But, I had already started talking to our human resources department about me working from home on Fridays. I wanted to be like, Bri is not working, like, Wes is still a newborn. I wanted to be able to at least be home one day out of the week to make sure outside of just like nighttime, I'm there for like support. And now I'm like, this is, again, we've been having conversations about folks being able to stay at home like two to three days out of the week because the argument has always been, there's a lot of things we don't need to come into the office for.
Yeah.
Now, granted, I'm extremely privileged in that regard, okay. Right? Like, I have a job where I actually can do that. This is something else we talked about, where there are folks who, whether it be, whether it be the church, whether it be like medical workers, like there are folks who actually have to be on the front lines. But there's been so much conversation around moving to digital, and whether it be through education, whether it be through marketing and advertising. When you look at magazines, like there's been such a pivot, and we've been so slow to the curve.
Mm-hmm.
Right? We've kind of just been delaying. What I feel like is showing us this is like inevitable.
Yeah.
It's not going to be this. It's potentially going to be something far more catastrophic.
I mean, you said the church. I actually think the church has to reconcile that it's not necessary to be in that building the way that they are.
Yeah.
The pastor of the church that I grew up in, who actually is my age mate, he just is the pastor of the church that we grew up in together now.
Okay.
He said in a sermon last week that what's happening is if the church is going to survive this pandemic, it's going to have to figure out how to stop letting these four walls be a crutch. And they have been.
Mm.
Because if we physically can't come to this building, we don't have a church. That's the way that we're currently set up.
Right, right.
And
right.
Again, because we realize that for all of us, no matter how much, like I knew that the church had to stop being this building, but my mind never assumed that there would come a point where niggas couldn't go to the building.
Yeah,
and
right.
So like, we have been forced to really reconcile not only that we weren't equipped, but a lot of the stuff we've been doing has been holding us back from our full, like what will come of, and this isn't to make light of how serious this is, because I'm not trying to be the minister of like, God's got a way, God gonna make a, go make it well. But just acknowledging like, there's something on the other side of this that maybe we should have been considering, and now this is forcing us to consider for sure.
And I mean, Ebony Jeans, you're making like these, like this is important, like because this lives so far outside of just like what, like you brought the excellent point of education, right? And like having to take a really hard look at how we've set up institutions and how these institutions have been functioning for centuries, like in a very specific sort of way, as if we're not allowed to change, and how that change doesn't necessarily affect the message. It doesn't affect the lesson plan. It affects how we approach the work, right? Mm-hmm. Like how it affects how we approach ministry. It affects how we approach our syllabus and how we break it down, but it doesn't affect the message. Mm-hmm. You know? And I feel like, I think about my mom. Like my mom is 72, and like my mom is very much the, hey, Joelle, how are you? Like on FaceTime, but my mom is finally, my mom knows how to text finally, mm-hmm. right? She's kind of figured it out. Granted, my mom is never going to be the person that puts money. Like she's not going to open an online bank account. Uh-huh. Still, you know what I'm saying? Signs checks, mails them out, puts them in the post office.
Yeah.
But I think like when we were talking, it makes me think about the elders in the church and how where you get to a point, and it's an age thing for sure, where we get so anti-technology, mm-hmm. you know, because there's this overwhelming fear that, you know, people are going to be stealing our social security numbers or stealing our identities, which does happen. Mm-hmm. But I had, for me, and prior to this, I had to reconcile the fact that Lila's going to be going to school where she's not going to learn cursive. Like, mm-hmm. probably have a laptop instead
right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, how are we better equipping our generation, even the older generations, to be able to function in an age like we are in now? You know, because like, if it wasn't, I don't want to ever be in a position where if I'm not here, my mom doesn't know how to utilize certain things because she's so fearful of moving forward into like what's present, mm-hmm. you know?
We gotta be willing to even consider that our message might have been off as well though.
I
think about my students. So I teach in a very decolonized way. It's not approved, but it's what I do because.
Of course, because it's.
Who gonna check me, boo?
Because you that nigga, you know what I'm saying?
Basically, let me quit. They don't want none of this. I have a whole crew of English as a second language students in one of my women and gender studies classes. Mm-hmm. If we be in reality, it was very irresponsible for them to put those students in that class. The class is women, hip hop, spoken word, and social change.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
So they give me this maybe like 10 out of 25 students who English is their second language, and a good maybe like 9 of them are not from the United States originally.
Oh, wow.
So it takes me about 3 weeks to realize this, that like, oh, I'm talking about hip hop, and this is a whole, and that's not just English, this is a whole other language.
Yeah, for sure.
So the audacity of me to think that I'm about to grade these students all the same, mm-hmm. it's not realistic.
That's powerful, yeah.
It's
yeah.
the same thing, though, with the ways that we've had to shift to online. What I talked to my, I have been thinking about this for years because I used to teach Sunday school to teenagers for years, and they were speaking a different language. I don't care how cool I thought I was.
Yeah.
They were speaking a different language. And I was cool, corny. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I get.
I can't believe it, but it was a thing. I remember one of my aunts was like, you know, saying something about her grandson, my cousin. Yeah. And she was just like, you know, I just think it's very disrespectful. I call him, he doesn't answer, he'll text me.
Mm, yeah.
What you don't get is that this generation, this is their language. This is the tool by which they are communicating. Yeah. And it's very arrogant to assume that your way is the right way when we're in a whole new era. So here we are with all these businesses having to try to move online really quick, mm-hmm. when if they have been listening to what the streets was saying anyways, is that it has been time for us to shift and or to have this as an option at the very least. And certainly this is coming from some privilege. Having access to technology is definitely a privilege, but it should not be in 2020. It should not be a privilege. It should be just, you have access. That is a thing that we will make accessible. And so I think that of all the things that this is, it's also asking us to consider that maybe some of our message wasn't, some of our methods, you know, all the things, like we got to be rethinking all the things, because will it survive, you know, if we're speaking new languages now?
Yeah, the language barrier. That's so important, because whether it be hip hop, whether it be digital, like the digital language, like there's a way, like working at an agency has been so mind blowing for me, because it's the opportunity to A, see how brands actually run and measure like what they consider like their key performance metrics, right? Or like KPIs, that's like their key performance, whatever. And like how they've broken out their business models, how they approach campaigns. And that's a whole language in and of itself. Like I was so new going into that space. There was a lot of me having to learn and rethink and also try to understand where people were coming from and how they were speaking, because it was a language I didn't understand. Easy to forget that hip hop is a language in and of itself in that way, completely, you know? But to your point, it's like there was I forget the name of the restaurant in Queens. They clearly understood like marketing language, because they had to shut down what they decided to do instead. It was the first time I'd seen someone do it, but they were like, we're just gonna make meal kits. So they had the chefs prepare, like essentially preparing what they would be preparing at the restaurant, but packaging them in a way so that folks can order them online, they'd come pick it up, and then that would be it. And it's like they quickly figured out a way, mechanism to market to the consumer, but while also keeping the integrity of their brand, quote unquote. And like that in and of itself is a language. Like, and that requires teaching. And that requires access to the technology, but also requires access to the folks who have the knowledge. You know, and if you don't have a computer, if you have to utilize a library, or like, which means you have a limited time frame in which you can access technology, right? But even then you have to know where to go. Like I would have this conversation so often with the young folks, and it's like, you can't be mad at yourself for what you don't know. And we can tell people to like Google it until they're blue in the face, but I can tell you to Google something, but you have to be able to decipher that language.
What should I be asking? What should I be thinking?
You know what I'm saying? Like, I can't, that's not helpful. You know, speaking from a place of privilege as a Black man, where I haven't had to shoulder the work when it comes to, like, the amount of times I've seen folks just come up to Black women like, hey, can you answer this? Or can you tell me this? And it's like, first of all, like, check, you know what I'm saying? Check your own privilege. And at the same time, for me having to be able to recognize I have somewhat of a wealth of information. And so it behooves me to not just direct the person to the thing, but to also help walk them through the thing once they find it.
I was saying this recently about telling people to Google. I think that can be, even though it's a fun thing to do, and I do agree with it as the way to go if all else fails. But you can't just have people Google stuff, because also information is colonized. So like what's showing up in the first page could be a lie, you know?
Like SEO payment is real. Like, you have to know. Like, you have to know how to be, you have to also have the knowledge of discernment. And like that, and that is a skill set to be able to get to a place where you can say, okay, this is fake news. This is the link I should be clicking on. Like, us even talking about it, it's mind blowing to me how many steps are required that I don't think about anymore. I'm searching for something. I'm just gonna go to Wikipedia for this, or I know this website is a more credible website, more left leaning than this. Like, that's all knowledge that some people do not have or don't have access to.
That's good. Yeah. Which is like actually one of the things that feels very important to me. Part of the reason why I'm having these conversations is because, which I think I'm deciding to call them casual brilliance. I think that's what the whole thing is going to be called, casual brilliance, is because I realized that womanist praxis, what happens is we get together And we are maybe the first group of people from a sociopolitical perspective to acknowledge that we're co-creating knowledge when we talk. Mm. So that means that as we have this conversation, there is a combined intellect that is forming new intellectual understanding.
Gotcha.
And so when we walk away from this conversation, even if you said something as a result of something that I said, I will have to cite you. I might have been the thing that sparked it. I might have said hip hop, da da da, whatever. Yeah. But then on the other side of that, you said something. I have to cite you, even though it was inspired by something that I said. Mm-hmm. Because, and so what that might look like, and this is something that as we're evolving, like as we're moving to, there's just new knowledge, and we have to be available to, like, what does it look like to cite that? Yeah. And so it might be like, I was talking to the homie, and da da da, whatever. I can't just be like, yeah, this marketing is a whole new language.
Yeah.
I mean, that came up in a conversation that we shared, but it doesn't belong to just one of us. It belongs to both of us.
Yeah.
And so all of this is like, I feel like just where I am is just that we need to be willing to surrender. Maybe it's some ego stuff, you know, surrender to the idea that as much as I know, I really don't know, you know. It's not until I'm able to have a conversation with you and with, you know, whoever else, you know, with the homies or with somebody that I'm studying with, or it's not until those conversations happen that I really get to think about it in all the different ways, right? But I think that so many institutions haven't been equipped or thought, or it's just even thinking about that, just thinking about what it means to be able to say, we do know a lot about what we know a lot about, mm-hmm. but that's not all there is. That's not all the knowing. So what does it look like for us to maybe just hire Noel to come in just to talk?
Yeah.
Not even necessarily to consult, just to talk.
Yeah.
And then, I mean, I guess that's still consulting, but just to talk.
But that's, you're tapping into something that's so brilliant, casually brilliant. Mm-hmm.
Excuse me, pardon me. But that's what it is, though. It's the, when you think about the conversation that you've been having with your friends, though.
Yeah.
It's like, y'all just on the phone talking. Think about the first time we met. You were supposed to be there for like,
what? Literally, I mean, that was supposed to be like an hour. I think like 2 hours.
Four hours later. So all the things that come up just as a result of us being in community.
Yeah.
And we just don't have, when you don't have a language for that, you could take it for granted. And so it's being willing to like put a name to it so that it can, because that's colonized reality, but like naming a thing is what will make it valid.
No.
And so I think that we need to be available for that too, yeah.
That's so powerful. It speaks to something, I think. You were saying something about like the talking versus like consulting.
Mm-hmm.
What I enjoy about that is I think far too often we feel like we need to create boundaries for not just creativity, but for like thinking. And we're thinking in such a linear way.
Yeah.
And we like when people go off on tangents, like I'm really quick to be like, no, it's fine.
Yeah.
Like, I enjoy tangents because I enjoy seeing where people wind up going from the thought and how it connects to like the overarching theme of whatever we're discussing. And then also it's always a jewel. Like if I'm open to it, it's a jewel. Like the reason I love talking to you so much is like prime example, when we were sending those voice notes back and forth, you had made me think about the needs of the church in a way that I hadn't been thinking about. And partially because like I think ego was in the space of, you know, this is why all these institutions need to shut down and they're putting people at harm. And it's like, Joelle, I just had a conversation with like an elder and like, this is like the tithes are how they function.
Mm-hmm.
Having to like understand that and be like, yeah, wow, you're right. I wasn't thinking about that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like my frame of reference was limited in that capacity until we had a conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Then now it allowed me to be more empathetic. You know, because now I'm having to check myself all the time because I'm a judgy motherfucker. Like, as much as I speak peace, like, in my head, I'm like, oh, these motherfuckers wearing masks? Come on, really? This is annoying. As opposed to being like, all these people might actually be, like, autoimmune compromise, or they might, this person might have just recovered from cancer, or this person has an elderly mom who, I don't know their situation, and so I have to check myself constantly to stop it.
Yeah, it goes back to actually what I was saying to, because I am too. I'm certainly. I sit high and I look low. And but no, I think I'm very, transparently, I'm very annoyed by how much my neighborhood isn't taking, this is judgment language, isn't taking it serious.
Yeah.
But I read this, who is it? Somebody, one of the New York State representatives or whatever is trying to really push forward. Several of them are, but it was a particular one. I can't think of his name right now. Okay. Trying to push forth the 90-day rent cancellation.
Oh, yeah.
Which needs to happen logically. The government can't tell jobs to shut down, but then they still expect niggas to pay rent. It's just confusing to me that that wasn't immediately like a, ain't no rent. I don't get it, but okay. So in the little survey that I filled out, like I signed the petition or whatever, and then it was asking like, what other needs do you feel like we need to be considering in this time? And I wrote, and I hope that it's, I haven't seen it yet, but I hope that it's something that will happen. I wrote that, what I was saying earlier, it is very presumptuous that everybody's getting their information from the same place. So mm-hmm. what that looks like is when I see the niggas on the block, like piled up, listening to music like it's a party because the weather was nice yesterday, my natural proclivity is to judge that, is to be like, WTF are y'all doing? Doing this?
All
y'all
caps.
Gonna be, caps. You can't be doing that. Y'all gonna be the reason that they're gonna come shut whole buildings down. We just gonna for real be quarantined because y'all can't stay in the house. But then I thought, like, something grabbed me, and I thought that everybody doesn't have the same information. And I know that because we probably all have an auntie that has sent us a text message that said you need to be boiling some onions and some drinking it, and then just inhale it, let it waft a little bit, and that will cure the coronavirus. Then after you do that, you need to go down to the, we all have that auntie or that cousin.
Absolutely.
Additionally, we all have a homie or a hotep ex-boyfriend, I'm talking about myself, a video link of this old black Jamaican man talking about black people can't get it, this is a conspiracy, da da da, whatever. And while that is annoying, if your primary information comes from some one place, again, it's very presumptuous of us to assume that everybody is getting their information from the World Health Organization. And so it's like there is a natural, like there's a natural like, ooh, I hate y'all. Y'all really trying to, you know, go in the house. And then something will grab you and be like, we're not all getting our information from the same place. It's very, very evident and obvious to me. And so that's what I was saying to this particular representative in this survey, that like, y'all have to do a better job of disseminating appropriate information because people are not getting, like, somebody was playing a good a game of pickup the other day at the park. And I'm like, well, y'all niggas go home.
This is not the place. This is not the place.
Have you visited thefreepeopleproject.com lately? I recently launched a new program called the Dream Yourself Free Masterclass Intensive. It is a 6-month healing program that is going to support you in the areas of intergenerational healing, ritual building, shifting money and blueprint success, writing ourselves free, and so much more. Again, thefreepeopleproject.com. Click on the option that says Dream Yourself Free.
It makes me think about what started getting me really frustrated about writing essays and like being on panels and whatnot. Mm. It's like the circle jerk that I felt like I was involved in, because the folks who had access to the language, mm-hmm. language and vernacular that felt very close to home and to community, niggas is not reading that.
Right.
The niggas who need to read it are not on Twitter mm-hmm. going to medium.com to read my essay. The niggas who need to read it are, They're hugging the block. They're the dudes who probably need a physical piece of paper that says
leaflet.
Yeah. Uh-huh. You're saying, like, nigga, you gonna die. Like,
go home, my nigga. Yes.
Thank you. You know, like, what, why we, it is very, it is, it's very, it's very presumptuous of us to think that how everyone accesses the information or that everyone has access.
Yeah.
You know, like, yeah, you are absolutely right about it.
Yeah, I don't watch the news. And so probably the thing that has been good for me about having access to, you know, Zoom or FaceTime or, you know, Google Hangouts, whatever, with my family, is that I get to have like at least a once a day, this is the update. Did you hear about this? Because I don't watch the news because I am deeply empathetic. And so I'd just be over here laid out on the floor all day if I were to be consuming. It's so, right? Like it's so much, people are dying. And so if you think about like how that's impacting you and then multiply that times 25, for my, you know, my heart is just like, God, what you gonna do? If you don't help us, we ain't gonna be helped, Lord. You're gonna have to come see about us. But so it's really like the, exactly what you were saying. Like everybody's not, I am niggas. When you say niggas is not on Twitter all day, niggas not reading Medium, me is niggas. I'm not, I can't, that's why. It's not even that the language is inaccessible to me. It's that I can't consume that way. It will wear me out and emotionally I'm just not able to. So I have to have other ways of being in community in order for me to have the amount of information I can handle and then move forward. But if there is an institution, an organization, or a government in itself that isn't considering, definitely not considering my homies out here on the street, you know what I'm saying? Definitely not considering them, then of course nobody's thinking, maybe we should hand out some leaflets. Maybe we should, you know, post some flyers around the neighborhood.
You know, as much as we're talking about technology, I also love this because we're also saying in that same breath, we also need to go back to leaflets and pamphlets because there's not a one-tiered approach.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we tend to look at a, like, this is going to be a one-size-fits-all answer for everything, whether it be a pandemic, whether it be like issues with education or like pandemic oppression. Like it's not, there's this one solve. There's like one band-aid and that's going to cure everything. It's like, it is better ways of digital access. We need physical manifestations of the information passed out to folks. It is communication verbally so that it's not for the folks who can't read. It's like, I need to be able to hear. Like, what are we doing in order to answer the questions that people have about this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think that we just need to be available for the fact that listen to Black women as a hashtag.
Yeah, basically.
You know, it's not just a cute little hashtag. But I was talking to Candace Simpson. I don't know if you know Candace. You should know her. So I will connect y'all through social media. But Candace Simpson was saying the other day, she wrote this piece years ago. So what was the title? Something like Black Women Can't Keep Being Your Canaries. And she was talking about how, you know, the canary could go down and determine how toxic a situation was. And then if it came back a certain way, that's how you would know, like, oh, that's not safe. And yeah, basically, like, nigga, you thought that with your mind?
How'd you put that together?
Dang. And so it's like thinking about how the most, I'll use my girlfriend Jay Perry, for example. Yeah. Jay Perry is a queer Black, chronically disabled woman. Yeah. Personally, we should just be listening to Jay, period. Like, just give Jay the mic and we
probably walk away. Yeah,
whatever. Yeah. We can cover a multitude of things just, you know, in that one being.
Yeah.
But when you don't do that, then you get to these moments where the least of these are still not being served.
Yeah.
Because all this time we realized that listen to Black women really was just a cute hashtag that you like to throw up every now and then.
Yeah. Like, are you actually doing the work?
Yeah, are you really doing it? Yeah.
Yeah, and I think this environment is also begging that question, right? Like, are you really doing the work? I think, you know, it's something I have to make sure I'm checking myself about. It's like, it's easy to kind of to speak in platitudes about what needs to happen and what we're going to do, or what our concerns are, and like listen to Black women. But like, are we actually doing the work, and are we actually in service of the things that we're speaking about, especially for the community? You know? And like, and what can we be doing more of? Like, what I've been trying to like ask myself, and just even ask others, is like, if you've been doing, if this is like more than a bare minimum, if you feel like you've been meeting your quota of like community, like, and I feel like there was something you posted on Instagram that was very much similar to that. And it wasn't like that language, but Zach, it was more like a call to action. Like, what else are you doing? Or like, what are the other ways you can be showing up for your, like, for your community? You know?
Yeah, this is saying that we need each other so desperately. And this has to, like, if you weren't leaning into that as like, if I got it, you got it. It's time. You have to.
Yeah, this is it. You know, like, when you're talking about, like, new knowledge, I think that's such a beautiful concept, because I think about Lila, I think about Wes, and the child rearing process is very much like it brings me to mind the idea of how much new knowledge is not to say Wes doesn't know anything, but, you know, she's like a blank slate. You know, and this is like, I remember when raising Lila and being like, yo, I'm teaching her mad new things.
Yeah.
Like, she doesn't know what a table is. Mm-hmm. And then, like, the layers of language required to understand what a table actually is, like, how it's of service, all these things. Like, she learns through visual cues, through things that I'm telling her, through things that she's learned from other people use it. Like, there's so much, but we don't give ourselves enough credit. Enough room to say, oh, wow, there's actually more room to learn new things. Or relearn things in a new way that we didn't imagine
before. And I appreciate actually what you just said actually is very, it makes me think about something that simple. I think we also don't give ourselves enough credit that what we have is important to the pot. You're teaching the baby what a table is. And it would be very easy for you to undervalue how big of a deal that is, that, you know, I taught my baby what a table. I remember the day that she was on your Insta stories and y'all was talking about how she was going to eat the apple. All of the lessons inside of that one, you know, little simple lesson, like that a man could talk to me gently, that I could have the option, well, don't you want to wash it first? Let's think about this, right? You know, it's like all thinking about all the things, all the lessons that come as a result of that. And we could really undervalue that. And I think it's important for us to, this is what I'm talking about, like about community. Like if you have not been, I have a girlfriend who lives in Brooklyn. You know, I don't really like going to Brooklyn because it feels out of town to me.
Yeah, it is. It's a new city, I understand.
Ooh, it's out of town. But girlfriend of mine lives in Brooklyn. Her husband travels a lot for work. She's pregnant. This is a couple months ago. I mean, he's home now for sure, especially because of the situation. But, and I'm like, the thing that I need you to understand is if you get home today and you got a case of water and you just can't get the case of water up the stairs, don't you sit down there at the bottom of the stairs and either cry and or overexert yourself. I will come from Harlem to Brooklyn to carry the case of water up the stairs for you. And that wouldn't put me out. It would be like my friend can't get the case of water up the stairs. That's a very basic. And so I feel like that's the place where we are right now. It's like people are in quarantine by themselves, that, you know, like you have to check on them. You have to make sure that you know how people are doing. You have to be like, do you need some bread? I can put it in the, you know, little drop box. I could, you know, like, what do you need? Are you good? And I just feel like that is a thing that we haven't done enough of in these times.
Yeah. And I feel like, man, that is so powerful. It makes me think of, when we talk about activism, when we talk about showing up for community, I think we tend to think of it, and I'm saying this because I think what you said is so profound and important. Like, we tend to think of it in group settings, right? Like, I'm going to show up for community. And so that's like a whole swath of like
Right.
Like 8 to 4 blocks, or like my county, as opposed to my homegirl, my homeboy, like my non-binary like person.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Need of something. That is my community. Mm-hmm. And then I'm showing up for them. It allows others who think that it has to be some like tremendous lift. Like I have to be canvassing the entire neighborhood, like making sure I'm picking up every elderly woman's groceries. It's like, yeah. Nah, picking up Mr. Johnson.
Yeah.
Who's leaving eight like key food, you know what I'm saying? Then by all means, thank you, babe. Well, by all means, then like do that. You know what I'm saying? Like that is also the work. And like one is not less important.
Period.
You know? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's so real. It's a thing that I want us to continue to trouble moving forward. Yeah. What does it look like for us to really break our hearts open for each other? And like, yeah. It's because it's scary it's a thing that I'm certainly maneuvering through, being willing to let my people know that I have need for something, yeah. But then also being available for my, like making sure that y'all know if you need something from me to yeah. not hesitate to ask for it. I had a homeboy that I used to say to, like, we'd be around here talking about, that's my friend, that's my friend, that's my friend. If you can't call them and say, I don't got no food, can you order me a pizza and send it to the house? Is that really your friend? This was years ago where, like, the only thing really you could order online for somebody and send it to them was, like, a pizza. Yeah. But now, like, you could Uber eat somebody a cup of coffee, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
And so, like, I really, really, more than anything, hope that that is one of the things that we walk out of this time with, is that we come into a deeper understanding of community with one another. That for real, like, if y'all need me to go get the baby some, mm-hmm. whatever, 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 you know what I'm saying? That it wouldn't even, I would roll my eyes on the train, but it wouldn't, there would be nothing in my space that's like, oh, I can't believe they asking me to do this. It would be like, it in fact becomes like a great honor and privilege to know that you're such a part of a community that people entrust, like trust you enough to be like, this is a thing that, you know, we just need the help. We just need, you know, we're just really struggling in this way. And I feel like this shutdown and the fact that we don't know the end of it is gonna, and we don't know if they're gonna have sense enough to really freeze rent. And they think $1,200 for people that live in New York City is enough money to do anything other than, I don't even know what we're gonna do with it. But yeah. So we have to be in deep community with each other, or I don't know that we will survive.
It's something it's a practice I've tried to initiate with like the folks that I care about. It's like asking yourself, like, what do you need? Like, wake up in the morning, what do I need, right? Like, is it a bologna sandwich? Is it a hug? Is it a kiss? Is it like a love letter? Like, and then like that's category one. And then move down to the next category. It's like, okay, out of the things that I need, what can I give myself out of those things? Like,
okay.
I can make myself a bologna sandwich, you know what I'm saying? Like, right now, unfortunately, because of COVID, fortunately, I can hug Bria, but some don't have the opportunity to hug someone or whatever. And so once you get from that category, you then move down to the, okay, for out of the people that I know and I care for, I can now let them know, here, this is what I need. Like, I need a hug or I need a smile. And what I imagine is that enables the person who's the recipient of that message to then say, hey, A, I'm not in a space to proffer that to you, unfortunately, but I can do blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. Or yes, I can actually do 4 through 5 mm-hmm. or 4 through 7 for you. I'll be there in a second, or I'll call you right now and we can figure it out. And it's like part of that, it's what you open with, which is like us being willing to break open our hearts. Mm-hmm. Because once you do that, the ability to say, I need a thing, does not become an act of failure or an act of, I'm not enough. Mm-hmm. But like, I'm seeking community in order to ensure that I'm not in a space where I'm in desperation.
Yeah. I love the way you just said that, because it just made me think of community as an extension of myself. I do have it. Yeah. Somebody in my squad got a hug. Somebody in my squad got $5. Somebody in my it's not defeat. I have it. My community is an extension of me. If I want to get in touch with somebody from the roots. Mm-hmm. Somebody in my community has that access.
Yeah, there's somebody we actually specifically know.
So you think about, like, I went to this very extreme thing to, you know, prove that, like, yeah, no, we're always like 1, maybe 2 degrees of separation from the thing that we have need for. And that's the beauty of community. I think that in this time, we have to do a better job of making sure that our community knows that I'm showing up with my piece. So whatever my piece is that you have need for, I got it. I was talking to Mo Brown about this, Mahogany Brown about this the other day. It wasn't on camera though, so this is a separate conversation. I was talking to her about when people ask you for something and you can't do it, you know, that being in a healthy community is about having people who don't feel no kind of way about the fact that you said no.
Yeah.
In fact, they appreciate that you were vulnerable enough to be like, I ain't got it to. It's not that I don't have it. I don't have it to do. I can't even do it.
Yeah, I love that. And like, today is not the day. Mm-hmm. Like, and if you ask me tomorrow, it might be a different answer. Yeah. You know, and I might be able to come. But the fact that I know what you need now, mm-hmm. you may not even have to ask me tomorrow. Mm-hmm. That allows me the ability to now know your circumstance and be proactive about it. Because mm-hmm. we've got a whole lot of folks with imaginary like circumstances because no one else knows mm-hmm. that they're going through something. Mm-hmm. You know, and you said something that's so important because I'd struggle with. Like, what am I bringing to the table for the community? Like, I've recognized very early on, like, I was never the person that was going to canvass the neighborhood, like, vote for this politician or whatever the case might be. What I can do is proffer love and give information as best as possible and trying to lean, especially now, like, leaning into that skill set. Mm-hmm. You know, like, knowing, like, okay, there are things that I know how to do really well. How can I show up for the people that I care about, mm-hmm. and not just my circle community, folks like yourself, Callie, like my mm-hmm. partner, whomever, but like the social media community, mm-hmm. and realizing that too is an extension of me, and not feeling weird about it.
Yeah,
at the time we were made to feel weird about, oh, this is like a community, like these are as if these people who exist behind the act aren't folks who have families, who have lives, who have partners who have to grieve or healing, like being able to create space for defining community on our own mm-hmm. terms.
Mm-hmm. That brings us full circle. And I feel like we could just talk all day long and I want you to get back to your baby and your boo. But full circle is back to the beginning of this conversation where we're talking about how institutions have, you know, kind of, you know, moving to online. Yeah. And there's this, there's been this unwillingness to really acknowledge this whole language, community, space, existence as something that was valid and thriving and alive and very real. And so, like, here we are having to see some of my best friends on the planet I met on MySpace years ago. And then in real life, they became my actual people. Yeah. Like a whole squad of people became my people because of MySpace. And that's, so
to
undervalue that as a place, I'm always thinking in terms of the church, because I feel like the church is one of those institutions that has maintained this idea of what it means for so many years that other institutions have maneuvered in more fluid ways, even though they've been rigid at the same time. But the church has been like, this is what we doing. And now here we are having to really redefine what that means. And so Again, just kind of bringing that full circle, what you were saying about, like, you know, community, like this idea that this place, this that may have been virtual, but was very real.
Yeah.
And if you were not engaging with it, and if you are not engaging with it as a very real thing, I don't know if you're doing your whole job, you know, the fullness of your job.
Yeah. Word.
That's on period, Pooh.
Period. Word. Speaking of gospel.
I love you too much.
I love you so much, Ebony Jeans. You are such a brilliant, phenomenally gifted human being.
I was about to stop recording, but let me let you keep going. What else?
It is an honor and privilege to be in community with you. Like for real. Like the level of insight and knowledge and like warmth that you bring into the space, I think is something that I know I don't take for granted, but I think we as a community tend to take for granted how much like warmth, love, and empathy matter when we're having conversations about whether it be about, again, about whether it be about institute, like the breaking down of institutions and like capitalism and patriarchy and like misogyny, whatever the case might be, like how that can shift how we're holding foundation for the conversation. Mm. You know, like you do a really good job of that. So.
Thank you. I and this ain't even a tit for tat because I like it to end with me being amazing. So we could end. But also, I feel this. I genuinely feel the same way. Prior to us actually meeting in person, I have been a fan of yours on the World Wide Web.
The World Wide Web, okay. Yeah,
on the World Wide Web. And that's one of the things I've always been very grateful for, seeing the way that you attempt to hold yourself accountable. And like just even in this conversation, like acknowledging your privilege, I appreciate that. And it, in the moment, because that feels like somebody that's willing to be accountable. And the tension that we can have sometimes as Black men and Black women who deeply love each other, we just need that willingness for both of us to be accountable to one another, for sure.
Yeah, let's break open our hearts, you know, like you said.
Period. Yeah. Let me stop. I really want to have a different ending than period, too. But that's what it is.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Casually Brilliant, a Zooms with Friends masterclass podcast series with Ebony Janice. A new episode drops every Wednesday at thefreepeopleproject.com. Just click on the Casually Brilliant tab and get ready to be casually brilliant with me. Until next time. To support my work, you can subscribe to my Patreon at patreon.com/EbonyJanice. Subscribers at the $50 or more level get access to all content plus enrollment in my BGM Institute courses on Beyonce and African Spirit Justice and my course on Hip Hop as Liberation Theology. Plus, I have more courses being added in the coming months. Each course is an 8 to 10 week curriculum with a video lecture and all supplemental materials are provided. Again, you can visit patreon.com/EbonyJanice to subscribe.